Welcome to the deep dive. You know, for, gosh, over a century now, Alzheimer's disease has felt like this looming shadow, sort of an inevitable thing with no real way out. But what if that's changing, like really changing fast? Today, we're jumping into what feels like a genuinely transformative time. New understandings are, well, they're flipping the script. Okay, let's unpack this. So just a few weeks back, end of July 2025, right? The International Alzheimer Committee had this huge meeting. I mean, almost 19,000 people. And the buzz apparently was just incredible. This wasn't your standard conference. It sounded like they were unveiling stuff, new interventions that could fundamentally change how we tackle this disease.
Yeah. And what's fascinating here is, you know, you've got this grim statistic, Alzheimer's, the sixth highest cause of death. It's serious. But then you hear scientists saying something pretty bold now. They're suggesting it could become an unnecessary affliction for maybe half of aging Americans, almost half. So that's what this deep dive is about. How do we get to that life without Alzheimer's? Because, and this is key, it's not simple. We have to understand it's complex. Lots of contributing factors. So real progress, whether that's a cure or just delaying it or even reversal in some cases, it all hinges on hitting it from multiple angles.
Right. And that's our mission today, isn't it? To pull out the most crucial bits from our sources about these breakthroughs. You know, the diagnosis, slowing it down, maybe even reversing it in certain settings. And most importantly, figuring out what you can actually do about it, like starting now. When you think back, I mean, since 1906, when it was first described, it's just been this long, frustrating road, right? Felt kind of inevitable. But now, like you said, the sources are suggesting we're at a real turning point. It feels exciting. So what are these breakthroughs giving scientists this hope?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's not just about, say, one new drug, though those are part of it.
Yeah.
It's a bigger shift. We're talking breakthroughs in diagnosing it earlier, more accurately, and importantly, using less invasive ways to do it, but also new therapies targeting different things like inflammation or how the brain uses insulin or even how it clears out waste, things that can actually delay progression. And yeah, in some, you know, specialized clinical settings, they are seeing reversal by tackling all those complex factors together very carefully. It really shows we're understanding it now, not as this single static thing, but more like a dynamic process we can influence.
So it's like moving from a shotgun approach to something much more targeted, a multi-pronged attack.
Exactly.
So for the, what, 7 million Americans who have it now or are worried about it, it means those factors attacking them are becoming clearer. We understand the enemy better.
We do. And that understanding, well, that gives us power, doesn't it?
Okay, so if it's this complex thing, how do we spot these different factors early on? That's where this idea you mentioned comes in, the cognoscopy test.
Mm.
Sounds kind of intense. What does that actually involve? How does it help us get ahead of symptoms?
Well, yeah, the name cognoscopy definitely suggests a deep look, like a colonoscopy, but for the brain's health, sort of. It's meant to be comprehensive, proactive, a brain checkup. It pulls together a few key pieces. First off, genetic testing. This is really important because we know the APOE4 gene is the biggest genetic risk factor. It affects how your brain handles fats and clears out certain proteins. If you have one copy, risk goes up. Two copies, significantly higher. So for those folks, the advice is clear. Create really strict lifestyle patterns. That means focusing hard on regular exercise, watching blood sugar, cholesterol, inflammation, because those things directly impact how well your brain can clear out that amyloid stuff.
Okay, so genetics is one piece. What else is in this cognoscopy?
Then there's blood testing. Big news here is the FDA okayed the Lumipulse biomarker test. It can actually detect amyloid plaques from a blood sample.
Wow, okay. Amyloid, those are the sticky protein clumps.
Exactly. The ones that build up and mess with brain function in Alzheimer's patients. And the big deal with this blood test is, well, it's less invasive and more affordable, much easier than getting a PT scan or a spinal tap, you know?
Yeah, those aren't exactly easy to get everywhere.
Right. So this makes early detection potentially much more accessible for a lot more people.
Makes sense. And what's the third part?
The third part is functional testing. This is looking at the bigger picture of your body's internal workings. So it checks things like your metabolism, how well your cells are using energy, your hormone levels, big impact on brain chemistry. Nutrient use, are you getting what your brain needs for repair? How well are your detoxification systems working? Oxidative stress, think of it like cell rust. And definitely your inflammation levels and immune function, because we know chronic inflammation is a huge driver in neurodegeneration. Understanding all this helps pinpoint imbalances that could make you more vulnerable to cognitive decline way down the line. Lets you intervene earlier.
So you put all that together, the new understanding, these better tests, it really makes that optimistic view seem, well, plausible, right? That Alzheimer's should be a rare disease.
It does. It shifts us from being seen as just an inevitable part of getting old to something we can potentially prevent or at least push off significantly.
Okay, before we dive into what we can do, let's quickly clear something up. People sometimes mix up dementia and Alzheimer's. Dr. Anne McKee's work helps here, right?
Yeah, it's a common confusion. Basically, dementia is the big umbrella term.
Yep.
Covers like over 100 different conditions affecting the mind. Alzheimer's is just the most common type of dementia under that umbrella. So one's the category, the other's a specific disease.
Got it. Category versus specific type.
And knowing that distinction leads to this really striking statistic from the sources. About half, 50% of people tested who are over 85 actually show the physical signs of Alzheimer's in their brains, you know, the plaques and tangles. But here's the kicker. Many of those same people, they still have perfectly normal cognitive function. They're sharp.
Wow, so the damage is there, but it's not affecting them.
Exactly. And if we connect that to the bigger picture,
mm-hmm.
well, it highlights this idea of cognitive resilience,
mm-hmm.
the brain's amazing ability to kind of work around the damage, to keep functioning well. It tells us that even if some changes are happening, there's a lot we can potentially do to build up this resilience, this buffer.
That idea, cognitive resilience, that feels really hopeful, empowering even. So let's get practical. What do the sources say are the best ways to build that resilience? They really hammer home that this isn't something you start thinking about at 65. They say our mental health journey actually begins in our 30s or even 20s. That's quite early.
It is.
And that we have to take control, right? Must control our own health future, not just rely on doctors later. So what are these concrete steps?
Precisely. Personal responsibility is huge here. Okay, let's break down these actions and importantly, why they work for brain health, according to the sources.
Okay, first one, mental fitness. This is more than just puzzles, isn't it? They talk about staying connected, knowing what's going on in the world, knowing the date, but also learning something new every day. How does that help specifically?
It's all about building what scientists call cognitive reserve. And neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to adapt. When you constantly challenge your brain, learn new things, stay engaged, you're literally strengthening the connections between neurons. You might even grow new ones. Think of it like building up savings in a bank account. This reserve acts as a buffer. So even if some parts of your brain are affected by aging or disease, you have other pathways, other strengths to compensate. Learning keeps the brain flexible, adaptable, younger, really.
Right, keeping it active, building those reserves. Okay, next, physical exercise. The sources are really strong on this. Elixir of life, number one health benefit. What's the direct brain link?
Oh, it's huge and multifaceted. So yes, exercise boosts heart health, which means better blood flow, oxygen, nutrients to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
That's basic. But it also directly stimulates the growth of new brain cells, neurogenesis, especially in the hippocampus, which is critical for memory. It reduces inflammation, helps regulate blood sugar, improves sleep, all things that protect your neurons. Our bodies, as the sources put it, are like these high-performance machines built to last a century. But they need maintenance. Daily effort, walking, moving, lifting, and pushing its signals to your body tells Mother Nature, we are worth keeping. It's essential upkeep.
I like that analogy. Okay, then social connection. Keeping an active social life, playing games, volunteering. How does hanging out with people help our brains? Seems more emotional.
It has emotional benefits, definitely. But it's also a serious cognitive workout. Think about it. Conversations require language processing. Memory recall, understanding social cues, empathy, sometimes quick thinking or problem solving. It directly stimulates various brain regions. Plus, being socially connected combats isolation and depression, and those are known risk factors for cognitive decline. It often helps manage stress, too.
Which brings us neatly to sleep, aiming for 7 hours of complete sleep. Why is sleep so critical for preventing Alzheimer's specifically?
This is absolutely vital. During deep sleep, your brain has this amazing cleaning system called the glymphatic system. It gets really active. And what does it clean out? Metabolic waste, including, crucially, those amyloid proteins we talked about, the ones that form plaques in Alzheimer's. So think of deep sleep as your brain's nightly power wash cycle. If you consistently shortchange sleep, that waste can build up over time.
Wow, okay. Brain's cleaning crew only works the night shift. Got it. Then there's stress management, actively avoiding stressful situations. How does stress hurt our cognitive future?
Chronic stress is really bad news for the brain. It keeps your cortisol levels high, and prolonged high cortisol can actually damage the hippocampus again, that key memory center. Plus, chronic stress fuels inflammation throughout your body, including your brain. And as we keep saying, inflammation is a major enemy here. So finding ways to manage stress, whatever works for you, helps protect the brain tissue itself.
Makes sense. And vascular health, keeping those small blood vessels healthy, avoiding smoking, too much alcohol, toxins. Why the focus on the tiny vessels?
Because your brain is packed with them. They deliver the oxygen and nutrients every single neuron needs. Things like smoking or high blood pressure damage these small vessels. This can lead to reduced blood flow, tiny unnoticed strokes, or microinfarcts. Over time, this damage adds up, impairs thinking, and increases the risk for both vascular dementia and Alzheimer's. It's all interconnected.
It really sounds like it. Okay, nutrition and supplements. Get tested for B12 and omega-3 levels. Eat lots of fruits, berries, leafy greens. What's the magic there?
Well, vitamin B12 is fundamental for nerve function and making neurotransmitters. A serious deficiency can actually look like dementia. Omega-3s, especially DHA, are literally building blocks for your brain cell membranes. They also help reduce inflammation and keep connections between neurons flexible. And all those colorful fruits, berries, leafy greens, they're packed with antioxidants and anti-inflammatory compounds. They act like protectors for your brain cells, shielding them from damage.
Okay, almost there. Last one, sensory health. Getting help if you have trouble seeing or hearing, how does that connect to cognition?
Our senses are how we interact with the world.
Right.
They constantly feed information to our brain. If your hearing or vision is impaired, your brain has to work much harder just to figure out what's going on. That increases the cognitive load. It can also lead to people withdrawing socially because it's harder to participate, and we already know social isolation isn't good. So fixing sensory issues like getting hearing aids or glasses can reduce that strain and help keep the brain more engaged and active. All these things together, they work synergistically. They build that cognitive resilience, helping your brain, as a source to say, kind of circumvent those brain areas that may not be working so well by strengthening other pathways.
So what does this all mean? I mean, pulling it all together, the big message today feels incredibly positive, actually. Alzheimer's doesn't have to be this inevitable sentence. We seem to have more control than we ever thought. These new diagnostic tools, the genetics, the blood tests, they give us a much earlier look. Crucial insights. And then the power of what we do ourselves, taking care of our minds, our bodies, our social lives with these specific actions, it really offers a practical path towards cutting our risks significantly. There's real hope here, tangible hope.
Absolutely. And it really makes you think, doesn't it? This raises an important question. If we truly grasp that the choices we make every day, starting way back in our 20s and 30s, can fundamentally change our odds for a disease we used to think was just bad luck, well, how does that shift how we think about all aspects of our health every single day? Not just our cognitive future, but our overall well-being. It really puts the focus back on us, on personal agency, and making wellness a lifelong project.
That's a powerful thought to end on. A real call to action, maybe. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into, well, unlocking a future potentially without Alzheimer's, or at least with much less of it. We really hope these insights give you some things to think about, maybe some tools to take charge of your own health journey.